How was your holiday?
I haven't asked you, actually.
It was good. I mean, it feels like a long time ago now. It was a month ago. We had a nice bank holiday weekend.
Was it?
Back end of July.
You were away last week?
Yeah, bank. Mum and Dad's in Wales, Pembrokeshire. Doing a bit of farming. Finished harvest.
Did you? Did you have a big party after harvest?
Actually, funny you should say that. Mum brought some beers up to the farm that we were all at about 5 o'clock. To say thanks to everyone for well done. Because it rained that night, so we literally wrapped everything up.
Did you?
Yeah. There was an article in the FT, actually we could talk about it today, and that was on potentially on the agenda to talk about. There was an article in the FT about how it was a terrible harvest for British farmers. So I'll see if we can put a few charts up.
Why is it a terrible harvest?
Because of the weather. Because it was so dry, so they didn't get any rain. And
it's raining. It's raining all week.
Well, it's a bit late now. Billy, no. No, it's fine. How was your weekend? You went sailing and things?
I went...
Your sister was over.
Yeah, that wasn't this weekend. That was last weekend.
It was weekend.
Good. Yeah, we had a few days in Chichester over the bank holiday. It was nice. Went to the beach. Went sailing.
You stay in Chichester?
Yeah.
My mate lives in Bosham.
Okay, we were very slightly east of that, just over the water. The other side of Chichester Harbour. Trying to think what it's called now. Delkey it was. But it was lovely. Lots of young children, cousins got together, so it's fun.
Oh, lovely. Mm. I like that. One of my highlights of growing up was spending lots of time with my cousins, and I've got loads. I've got a big family. So it was good. Thanks for the coffee, by the way. It's great.
It's all right.
So you got a client in at 5?
Yes.
Teams or in the office?
Teams.
Well, I did a meeting at 10, a meeting at 11, lunch at 12:30, and a meeting on Teams at 2:30. And it's now 3:45.
It's because you spent the last month on holiday trying to squeeze it all in.
I haven't done any prep for this, any chance, but we've got a loose agenda. I think we'll be okay. Alex is back from holiday. He's got 10.
What are we discussing today?
Well, we're probably going to talk about Rachel Reeves, didn't we?
Yeah.
Seems to be number one topic of conversation with clients. Gilt Market is not having a good time.
No. Are we going to do an official start?
Yeah. Yeah, we can do. We on? 53? Yeah. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Taking Stock After the Bell, episode 53. Joined, as always, by my co-host and intrepid investment manager, James Hughes. James, welcome.
Thank you.
Got some research in front of you. What's that saying, then?
I'm reading from our good friend Dario Perkins about the Perkins Rule.
The Perkins Rule, right, yes. Slightly tongue-in-cheek. He wants a Nobel Prize type.
It's quite interesting, actually, because it's a timely reminder, actually, that this time last year the market did have a bit of a wobble over weak employment data, didn't it?
We had that
sell-off, and it's done the same again. And in his view, it's not something to worry about.
Okay.
He's saying that it was always going to be a slightly weaker market following Liberation Day just because of...
the uncertainty factor.
Exactly. But actually, the US economy is in pretty good shape still.
Okay.
And I think, bearing in mind, you know, Dario's been... I wouldn't say he's been negative for US, but he's very much been on the side of the fence in terms of there's good rotation, you know, there's a good opportunity into Europe and UK.
Yep.
Thinks US valuations are expensive, blah, blah, blah. So actually, I think reading this piece on US unemployment is quite interesting, actually.
Yeah, well, I think his view was that there didn't need to be much to go right in Europe in particular and Asia for markets to have a really good time at the expense of the US. And as we showed, I think, the last time, European equities are up 17-18% year to date. US equities are up barely 5% in new sterling terms.
Yeah.
So, you know, he just sort of quip on Twitter that whenever he was having meetings in December and January and talking about, you know, we should be buying Europe, he was getting laughed out of the room. So it kind of goes to show, wasn't it? And actually what I might do is I might kind of clip the headline here, but I was asked to comment for a piece in the I newspaper last weekend The title is the FTSE 100 has risen by 17% in a year, but have investors missed the boat? So, you know, I was asked to sort of comment why the FTSE has done so well, and there's a sort of couple of reasons, really. One, it's a bit sector and stock specific. So the industrial sector, notably the defence companies, Rolls-Royce and BAE Systems, both quite big stocks, are up 50%+ year to date. You also had very low starting valuations as well, so the UK equity market was very cheap. And you also had, you know, the broad kind of sector mix. You've got telecoms, utilities, tobacco,
banks,
consumer staples. Yeah, those kind of boring sectors have been good, and banks themselves have been phenomenal performance. I hadn't realised Barclays is up 50% year to date.
Yeah.
And the UK banks are all up a lot, because
I think actually NatWest is
probably done the best.
60-70, yeah. I would have thought.
Yeah, so, you know, and the reason that the banks have done so well is that interest rates were expected to fall quite meaningfully, but now they're not expected to fall as much. And when interest rates stay elevated, banks make more profits because they don't pay you or I any interest.
There's a lag as well, balances. Isn't there? Because when rates started increasing, actually bank share prices didn't react much to start
because
with.
Because we had 5-year fixed rate mortgages.
Correct. But actually, is that starting to come through?
Yep.
They're getting the benefit.
Yep. So the final sentence of this article, Raymond said, for first-time investors, the core message remains unchanged. It's important to focus on building a globally diversified portfolio across sectors and regions and avoid over-concentration. Mm. I mean, do you have any... I mean, it's a bit sitting on the fence, isn't it? But it's definitely not the case of stick it all in big tech or stick it all in UK banks.
No, and we've had... I mean, this week we've had a bit of a roll again, haven't we, in terms of US tech. It's certainly volatile. I mean, we had Nvidia's numbers.
Yeah, so let's pull up a little week. Nvidia chart, actually, shall we, whilst we're here.
Yeah, which, I mean, our tech analyst, Ben, you know, as we were coming into the numbers, you know, we sort of, we asked what his... obviously what his views were and if he was nervous about them, etc. And he made a really good point that we sort of knew what the numbers were going to be because we'd heard from all their biggest customers.
Yeah.
He'd shown that actually CapEx spend was off the charts. So we knew, you know, the numbers from Nvidia were going to be very strong. And actually they were pretty much bang in line, weren't they?
They were. There were a few complications, weren't there, around China. So
yeah. But that was expected, wasn't
it? Yeah, we don't really know where the US government sort of stand with letting Nvidia export chips to China. So the guidance for the next quarter and then the next year was slightly wishy-washy, wasn't it? Because it excluded any China contribution.
Yeah.
So the stock was off, what, 3%, I think? We've got a chart here year-to-date. The stock started the year at 140.
Yeah.
Got down to 120, got down to 100, didn't it, in the midst of, obviously it fell on the DeepSeek news.
Yeah.
It fell in April on the tariff stuff to about $100, and then it got to 180 a few weeks ago in the middle of August, and it's come back to 170 today. So it has been ultimately profitable this year, but also a little bit, you know, pretty volatile, pretty all over the place.
Mm.
But, it was last Wednesday night's viewing, wasn't it? I was... duly tuned in to CNBC, a few WhatsApps flying around. Ben was on TV the next morning, wasn't he?
He was on
CNBC,
yes,
7 a.m.
Was, yeah.
So well done to him.
I thought was he not BBC?
He might have been on BBC as well. I didn't see that clip if he did, but he has been on BBC before, for sure. But
Alex is saying Bloomberg as well.
Okay.
Well, he's got all the big channels.
Yeah, hasn't he just? He's our tech guy. So, yeah, I mean, biggest stock in the world. What is it? 8%, 7% of the US market, 5% of the global stock market.
Yeah.
Dwarfs the FTSE 100 in aggregate, so it's $4 trillion bigger than the FTSE, which is only about $3 trillion. One company. So, you know, we keep using ChatGPT, they could build in the data centers and the sheds, they need the chips to go in them.
Yeah. It's, this is sort of the thing that makes people nervous, though, isn't it? It's how much reliance we have on a handful of stocks. We've talked about it so many times. But whilst the demand for AI continues, Nvidia's best positioned, really the only one to benefit at the moment from that sort of capex spend.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, I mean, otherwise the sort of US market having a bit of a pause for breath. You know, the UK market continues to do well. European markets continue to do quite well, and it's good to see. Yeah, no, you know, a lot of sort of clients. I don't know about you, but you know, I turn to meetings at the moment, and it's all doom and gloom and tariffs and treasury and tax and bond yields. And the clients look at the portfolio and go, "Oh, it's gone up."
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, "Well, why has it gone up?" And you know, the answer, the only real sort of sensible answer I can come up with is that, well, companies are actually just really good at dealing with uncertainty, and they can just work this stuff out, no problem, and they can get on with it, and they can sell their products to their customers and carry on making money.
Yeah, and I think for me it all comes back to employment data, which is, if people are employed, they have confidence and they buy products and services. And in the UK, the confidence isn't quite as much as it is in the US.
100%.
You know, in the US, I think people are just genuinely more confident, and would always be. It's just the way they are. But you know, people, however nervous they are, if they're in a job, they do keep spending because they have to.
Well, the US consumer is unbeaten, aren't they? They just, if they've got money, will spend. In the UK, it's slightly different. We had Callum Pickering from Peel Hunt on a few months ago, wasn't it? And he was sort of banging the drum saying, you know, the UK consumer is actually in quite a solid position. Unemployment's low, wages are growing modestly.
I mean, savings rates are the highest they've ever been.
And debt levels in aggregate are quite low.
Yeah.
We had nationwide house price data this week, and that was pretty sickly. House prices, I'll see if I can get a chart. House prices have not really gone up in real terms for over 5 years. So I've got a chart here which I can show.
Presumably that's mainly because of interest rates.
Yeah.
Just affordability.
There's been a reset. I will find the chart in a minute. But basically, if you go back pre-pandemic, house prices are up by less than general prices. So inflation has outpriced. So in real terms, house prices are down over the last 5 years.
I'm not surprised at that, to be honest, because of affordability.
Yeah, well, rates have gone from 2% to 5%. So, it's no surprise. But, it you know, so many people will say, and you don't need to go far in the press to see, you know, my house is my pension and it's the, you know, ultimate safe asset. And there was a period where that might have been the case, but actually in recent history it's not the case.
I mean, the other thing is the rate cuts that have come. I think 0.5% cut in interest rates based on outstanding mortgages represents something like a $50 billion boost to homeowners.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So it's a massive amount of stimulus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they are coming through. And where are we? So we're 25. So people that are on 3-year fixed mortgages that were remortgaging at higher rates, there is that chance probably to be refinancing at lower rates today.
Yeah.
That's coming, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're probably six months. No, it's probably happening now.
Yeah. 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 So that will be, you know, of benefit. And again, here's the chart, just for the record. House prices here in the grey line is nationwide, and the yellow line is Halifax indices. I've just rebased these all to 100. And then you can see the prices via CPI are in red. And we can see that the red line goes up by more than the grey and the yellow lines. And we can see, you know, in nominal terms, actually, house prices are unchanged since 2022. So 3 years of flat nominal prices, let alone real prices. So, I think if mortgage rates stabilise here and rates drop a little bit, actually, I think the housing market will be okay. It should pick up, right?
Mm.
As you say, people should be able to remortgage. I think the worrying aspect for me at the moment, and certainly for Rachel Reeves and definitely for clients, is what's happening in the UK government bond market. So a traditional right-wing newspaper had an economist writing suggesting that the UK is going to need to go to the IMF for a bailout because the government are going bust, which raised, it's fair to say, raised a few questions, not least to my father, but plenty of others as well. And the sort of genesis of the article really was that 30-year gilt yields, i.e. what the government has to pay people to borrow money for 30 years, has gone up to the highest since 1998. And I'll post the chart here, which, you know, is clearly not good news, because we have a deficit and we have lots of debt and we need to finance that debt and we need investors to effectively lend their money to the UK government, and they are demanding a higher rate to do that. And it doesn't really help Rachel Rees, because every time interest rates go up, the interest on the debt goes up, and that gives her less money to spend on the good stuff, like health and education and all that. So, worrying. And then, of course, allied to that, we've got all these newspaper articles about, you know, taxes are going to have to go up in the budget in the autumn. It sort of starts off the whole cycle again that we had last year of uncertainty. Yeah. Which taxes are going to go up? You know, do I need to take my tax-free cash? What do I do? So it's a bit, a bit depressing.
Yeah, the mood's going to be pretty soggy until we hear the budget. And it's, as you say, you know, what if and what will happen. And then I suspect once the budget's been delivered, we'll probably spend the next month moaning about what's been delivered. So it might be a bit of a funny few months. I mean, September traditionally isn't a good month for investing anyway, is it?
No, but I guess what's frustrating, to come back to the point about, you know, the UK consumer is in relatively good financial situation in terms of savings and low debt levels, and unemployment's low, but they don't have any confidence to go and spend any money. So if we spend the next 2 or 3 months talking about which taxes are going to go up, that's not a recipe for you and I running out and spending a lot of money on whatever else it is it? No. And that you're in this vicious cycle, then, aren't you? But yeah, I mean, the meeting I had at an hour ago, the question was which taxes are going to go up in the budget. I'm like, with the best will in the world, I have no idea.
And what do you think about Keir Starmer employing 3 senior economists to oversee Rachel's budget?
Well, that's all part of this, isn't it? And gilt yields are up today and yesterday, partly off the back of that story. The market, I think, rightly thinks that Rachel Reeves is probably the best option for Chancellor at the moment, because if she's not there, then who else is going to take charge, and what are they likely to do? She's at least relatively moderate compared to lots of her MPs.
Yeah, and I think when Keir Starmer sort of didn't back her those months ago during Prime Minister's questions, the bond market did falter. And I think that probably delivered the message that
he needs to be very careful.
He needs to be careful when a change isn't wanted by the gilt market. So, I mean, is employing 3 senior economists sort of his way of putting some pressure on her to do what he wants?
Maybe. Yeah, I think that's probably...
And then it goes back to the question of what does he want?
Well, I don't think he knows. Well, they'd quite like to get the economy going a bit better, and that would make people feel instantly better.
And gilt yields down.
Now, what I would say is on the gilt thing is that two things worth pointing out. Firstly, sterling has not really budged, it marginally weak. So I'm going to put a 5-year chart of sterling up against the dollar, and we can see that actually sterling is slightly stronger against the dollar on average than it's been for 5 years, and we're not in anywhere near the same position as we were during the Truss Kwarteng budget. So international investors are not kind of worried about sterling assets per se. And then the second thing is that short-dated gilts, 2-year and 5-year gilt yields, have been quite well behaved as well. So if we look at the 2-year yield, for instance, that's not really budged, as you'd expect, because the 2-year yield is held down by base rates, isn't it? Bank of England drives the short end of the curve. So the 2-year yield remains solid around 4%. Still decent yield if you're a high rate taxpayer wanted to buy some low coupon gilts instead of holding cash. So that, you know, that sort of trade remains, still remains pretty tax friendly.
And particularly with, you know, if you're of the view that rates are going to be cut further, locking in
2 years,
the rate today
4% is pretty good.
Yeah, exactly,
I'd say. So, like, we're a long way from, this comes back to the point about this article in the Telegraph about the IMF bailout. You know, if we were close to an IMF bailout, then sterling would be cratering. But it's not, so we're not. So, and there are also, we don't have to look around too far to see that there's a lot of other countries in the world who are in a worse position than we are, notably our friends in France, who are about to lose another government.
Vote
of no confidence is next week.
And it's just worth mentioning the CAC 40 has had a pretty tough time, hasn't it? We've got a chart of that?
Yeah, but okay. Come on, Yuzi, you know better. It's not the CAC 40, is it? Come on, it's the CAC 40. for those of you GCSE French, the CAC 40 has had a pretty wobbly time. Yes, you're right. So if we've got a 2-year chart here of the CAC, we can see that European equities in general and the German index, the DAX in particular, has been really strong, but the CAC has been notably weak.
And what is interesting, we had this before, didn't we, when there was a vote of no confidence and the CAC really sold off, and actually it was a very good time.
It was a good buying opportunity.
Up French assets.
Yeah, no,
so
agreed.
That is not investment advice, but that's an observation.
So biggest stocks in France include LVMH, Louis Vuitton, who else? Total, the energy company.
Yeah. Pernod Ricard.
Pernod Ricard is the other one I was thinking of, yeah. So they're all multinational businesses that just happen to be based in France. Not, you know, the same as what's happening in the London market, really. So,
yeah,
I mean, weakness in the French equity market, French assets. I don't know. I mean, as Dave Mortlock at Berenberg often says, markets overreact to a lot of these short-term political things. In the short, so yeah, we'll see. But then the CAC has certainly had a softish week compared to other markets.
And I think, kind of overall, where we are in markets, we've had, a lot's happened this year. I can't believe we're talking about the year because it feels like we've only just started it, but we are in September. A lot has happened, and markets have been very good. I think having some digestion and sort of investors thinking about where they are and a bit of selling off, it's no bad thing. I think as we said last time, we've had very good earnings across the board. Mm-hmm. There's been decent beats. Companies aren't out there screaming that it's a wonderful time, but also on the flip side, they're not saying it's awful either. I think corporates are in good shape, particularly from a balance sheet point of view, and there's opportunities to grow earnings and revenues. So it's you get these periods in any cycle in any year where there's a bit of consolidation. I think that sort of throws off the very it throws out the very short-term investors and they panic and move on, and it gives opportunity for new investors. So I think where we are,
you get a lot of leverage to investors and hedge funds, and who ride momentum and markets going up, they pile in and add to risk. And then, of course, as soon as any sort of wobbles, they have to cut their risk levels, basically sell into a falling market, because that's their structure, because their time horizon is very different. Long-term investors, individual investors, have the benefit of having a long-term time horizon and mindset, where they don't have to do that because they're not worried about daily or monthly performance, 100%. As a lot of these kind of leverage players are. So don't underestimate the sort of structure of the market, really. I mean, you made the point about September has historically been the worst month for US equities on average. It's an average and negative month, I think. And then we remain scarred about Lehman Brothers going through on the 13th of September 2008. all kicked off that year, that's for sure. But, we'll see. It doesn't necessarily mean it has to happen again this year, but we should kind of be prepared and sort of embrace these. We're having a rough day today, and we were down nearly 1% across the board. But you're right, companies generally will be fine and they will thrive over time. Anything else sort of hitting your
it's
inbox?
As we were saying in the lift up to the room, where it's actually been a relatively quiet few weeks, hasn't it? Beyond sort of Trump's tariff lawsuit, and also lawsuit in terms of trying to get rid of Fed officials.
Yeah, so I think that's a good point, actually. So he's trying to get rid of Lisa Cook, one of the Fed governor's members, isn't she? Because allegedly she has claimed two homes as her primary residence.
Yep.
So she is there currently a lawsuit going on because basically he wants to get more of his mates onto the committee so he can get interest rates down.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm going to say feels somewhat third world. And the dollar has been weak and US yields are not, you know, the long end. Again, the long end in the US has reacted and the 30-year yield in the US has gone up as well. So it's not just a UK story. The one, you know, I might just put this chart up, but gold actually has been the one thing that's has moved up quite meaningfully in the last few weeks. And gold's had a really strong year so far, but it was sort of a little bit stuck at about $3,400. It's now broken out up into $3,500. And the other asset that often gets kind of compared to gold is, well, sort of moves around a little bit with gold, is Bitcoin, which I'm sure you keep a very keen eye on, Husey, but for those hodlers and crypto enthusiasts out there, looking at the youngsters in the room, it's been, it's been pretty weak, actually. So, the gold strength, I think, is kind of part and parcel of that. That kind of story that we're talking about.
I think, it's just uncertainty. It's worries about too much debt, sort of interest or yields going up, the cost of paying for that debt going up, and you know, slightly softer employment market. So, I think it's still a perceived safe haven, although it is priced in dollars, isn't it? So you've got to think about wherever your home currency is. Obviously for us it's sterling, so you know, on the US dollar chart it looks like it's done exceptionally well, and it has performed well, but obviously it hasn't done quite as well recently if you translate back to sterling.
Would you ever own any gold in PA, so called, in your SIP, for a sort of world ending moment?
No, because I think I'm going to have to retire. I've got lots of years left for retirement, and equities I think over that period
We'll do better.
Yeah.
I think I'm inclined to agree.
Yeah.
I am sympathetic to the view.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
We'll see. But no, I mean, gold being strong, which I think is part of that undermining of US institutions, and we've talked about it before.
I think with gold, I think, you know, you have real sort of gold bugs, don't you, who really believe in it. And it's just, I think you either think in that way or you don't. I can see why people would have it. For me, I'd rather have equities just because you get a share in profits. And in gold, you don't get a share in anything. It's just
productive versus unproductive assets in kind of simple terms. Yeah. And gold is an unproductive asset. It doesn't give you anything. If the world does end, you can go and technically you can go and spend it to buy food, but I mean, if it gets to that point, then you've got more things to worry about.
If you're taking your gold coins to the
my Kruger Rands. I'm inclined to agree. I mean, equities are a productive asset. You own a business, and I think that's that is, you know, healthy and constructive. So yeah, I mean, it's been a few sort of quiet weeks, isn't it? But it sort of feels as though we're back to school a little bit.
Yeah, when are the kids back?
Thursday, big day for Isla, so first day.
Oh, it's about Thursday as well.
Yeah.
You going to do drop off?
Yeah, I'm not visiting it for the world. First day of school is brilliant. You know, there's a tear in the eye for about 3 seconds, and then yes, they're back in school. I had them at home yesterday. There was a girl looking after them, nanny. And there was 4 kids in my front room, and I'm trying to work in my study, and it was pandemonium.
Is that why we've got no slides?
That's part of the reason we've got no slides. I'm doing on the hoof. Other than that, good. So much else planned? You got a busy diary? Clients want to meet up?
Yeah, I have actually. It's summers always used to be exceptionally quiet.
Yeah.
I do, and the last few years they just haven't been. But August has been really quiet. It's been, I think part of it is markets have been good. I think with what's going on in the world, portfolios, you know, as you say, have held up really well. So obviously part of that's our skill set in picking the investments.
Oh, absolutely. Well done.
But yeah, people have been in touch. I think there's quite a few new inquiries from clients that are, you know, either looking to structure something or unhappy where they currently are.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. I think, yeah, and it's you know, there's lots going on. So I think now the summer's over, it's a question of, we've got budget coming up, you know, soon it'll be Christmas, you know, we've got things to think about next year, you know, how are we planning, how are we positioning? US equities have done very well, do we still want to keep that, do we not? It's all those types of conversations which are obviously very important to have and interesting.
Yeah, so, well, the two meetings I've had today, one has been about potentially gifting some money to charity, decent sums, and how they go about that, and the sort of tax consequences in that. And the second one was about IHT mitigation, because the pensions, bringing the pension into the IHT net has pushed them over the threshold on the residence nil rate band.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, that's a sort of, you know, a real kind of double whammy. So,
yeah.
Right, I'm talking with the advisor was on, right, this is what we can do to bring your IHT bill down, and this is what we should be doing. And there's no easy answer.
No.
Every client's slightly different. It might be life insurance, it might be gifting, it might be trusts, it might be
family investment companies,
it might be spending, all sorts, really. And again, that has an impact on the portfolios that we manage, because if you've got a pension that was there growing, and you weren't going to take your income because it was silly to do so, if you're now going to start taking your income because you want to spend your pension down to bring the IHT bill down. That might impact what investments we're running.
Yeah, 100%.
Investment strategy. So lots of those conversations, and everyone's slightly different, and I think, you know, real sort of value to be added face-to-face with clients
for
the next 3-6 months. It's going to be very busy.
Yeah, that's good.
And your bike rack, what's the situation with that, Husey? Do you want to tell the listeners what happened last night?
I'm still scarred by it. I'll be scarred for a while.
But not quite nasty.
Yeah. Well, for the listeners, I have a bike rack at home on the wall that holds...
You don't need to say how many.
Holds the bikes from the front wheel vertically. And whilst I was in there, the whole thing collapsed. It was quite a bang. So, having
so the bikes were like standing upright.
Yes.
On this rack.
Yeah, but there's a the tyre not on the floor, so they're in the air. They're hoisted up slightly. Probably about the rear wheel is probably about 6 inches off the floor, and the front wheel's obviously upwards.
Yep.
So the whole thing came off and clattered. But on the face of it, the bikes aren't damaged actually, but the wall.
Big hole in the wall.
Yeah. So having paid someone to put it up there, it's a bit frustrating.
Sort of needless stress and admin that you don't need, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the screws that were put in weren't long enough. Is my bet. So
good luck sorting that out. Anyway.
Deals.
Should we call it a day? I don't know how long we've been, but that sort of seems about, you know, sort of run through of what's been happening.
Yeah, I don't think there's much else. I'm afraid not much more excitement to give.
We've got payrolls. US labour market data is Friday, so today is Tuesday, so that will probably be hit by the timing. And then there's the inflation report as well, and then the next Fed meeting. And the next Fed meeting is quite a big one, actually,
because clearly
Trump wants rates to be cut, and there's a lot of pressure on Powell.
Yeah, so what happens if they don't cut rates? Is that...
Well, he takes to Twitter and calls him a moron again. What can else can he... I mean, he could potentially fire him, but it's going to be... what do you do to the dollar if he does fire
him? Can he fire him?
I don't know. You're asking me like I'm sort of legal expert on the US federal government. I don't think he can.
I don't think he can fire him.
But, I mean, he's found ways of getting rid of governors, hasn't he? So he can stack the committee...
Yeah, he's trying to get the spend of the Fed building, wasn't he? Really, that was his angle.
Talking of just one more thing before we go, but talking of politicians blaming central banks, I did listen to the Bloomberg Odd Lots podcast with Joe Weisenthal and Tracy Alloway, and they had none other than the Right Honourable Liz Truss on.
Did they?
Which was, I mean, it was such a good listen, because they're great presenters, and obviously she's got lots to say because she's writing a book. But it was... I mean, 90% of what she talked about was the state's too big, we need to get taxes down, we need to get growth, we need to, you know, slash red tape, all the kind of classic things. And I totally agree with most of what she said. But what I will say was the absence of any sort of humility, or maybe I went about it the wrong way, was staggering. I just couldn't believe. She just blamed faceless, unelected bureaucrats, institutions, the civil service, the Bank of England, like, you know, everyone else was blamed. And there was no...
She didn't accept that not asking the OBR before the...
Not asking the OBR, sacking the chief secretary of the Treasury a week before.
I forgot that.
The gilt market was quite skittish that week anyway. She hadn't, you know, she hadn't, like, rolled the pitch, so to speak, of these sort of this ideas, and it came out of the blue. And the FT Alphaville website did quite a good takedown of the whole thing, basically saying, here's a chart of sterling dollar, and this is what happened in the timeline. It was nothing to do with the Bank of England. It was, you know. So it was a good listen. So I would encourage Bloomberg Odd Lots podcast to go and have a listen to it. It was pretty fantastic. But no, we'll see. We'll see what happens from here. But we are looking forward to getting stuck in, aren't we?
Yeah. It's nice to have a quiet few weeks, to be honest, but I think it'd be nice to get back in the thick of it.
Back to school, we've got some rain.
Exactly.
Garden
ready.
Grow again. We'll call it a day. Thanks very much for listening and watching today. Any questions, get in touch with james.hughes@quiltachievit.com and I'm jonathan.raymond@quiltachievit.com, and we hope to see you next time. Thanks very much.
Thanks.